Marvel Comics Star Wars Issue 17, The Crucible. I'm Joshua Lappin-Bertoni, and this is the Marvel Star Wars Podcast, taking a look at Marvel Comics' run on the Star Wars title. And as the cover tells us, special issue, with an exclamation mark, an untold tale of Luke Skywalker's past. And on the cover, we have Luke, against the backdrop of Tatooine's twin sons, holding a blaster towards us as Tusken Raiders and Jawas and a crash land speeder are behind us, along with Beggar's Canyon and Skyhoppers. But wait a second, why are we getting this? Weren't we promised the Empire Strike story for this issue? Isn't that what they said last issue? Huh. Well, the cover's done by Dave Cockrum and Bob McLeod, the one I just described, and as you can tell from the blurb and the stuff I described, this is a flashback story to Luke's life before the Imperials burned his farm, and that lying Jedi Knight Obi-Wan Kenobi smuggled him off-planet. Archie Goodwin is still writing, but helping him with the plot is Chris Claremont, and Chris Claremont is another Marvel legend. That's why I love these stories. I get a lot of comic book writers who I know from my superhero titles are writing Star Wars, and Chris Claremont, his work on X-Men is legendary. He practically made the X-Men. And Herb Tremp and Al Milgram are the guest artists. Don't really know anything about Tremp, but Milgram's inks I've seen throughout many other Marvel books, especially in the 80s. New artist, new writer, and no Empire Strikes issue. So, you know what that means. It's a fill-in issue, and fill-in issues usually stink, so let's see how this one stacks up. Don't forget, if you want to follow along, you can go to StarWarsMarvel.com, scroll down to the entry on February 12, 2010, and look at the pictures, and clicking on the pictures will give you a full thing. We start off with a very, very detailed panel of Luke Skywalker in the Millennium Falcon's cockpit. Lots of detail, and it's a great picture of Luke. Love that full page. And the size of the Falcon's cockpit actually looks more consistent with what it does in the movies, whereas the Marvel Star Wars early issues didn't always get the Falcon size right, especially in issue 5. Goodness, that thing was like a restaurant there. Well, while Luke's, you know, piloting the Falcon, he flashes back to Tatooine and the days before he joined the Rebellion, and we get a little womp rat, and Luke goes by in his landspeeder and shoots the thing. Holy heck, did Luke just murder that womp rat? Just like Quagmire /3PO said in the Blue Harvest Family Guy special, "You murder small animals for fun? That's the first indication of a serial killer." I think that this is also our first appearance of womp rats. We get Luke, and he's looking very, very, very young, as opposed to the Carmine Infantino inks friend from the past few issues, where Luke looks like he's old enough to be He-Man or something, and he's muscular. He actually looks like a scrawny teenager here. Luke revels in the fact that he was able to shoot the thing from his land speeder with one hand controlling the speeder and the other hand shooting. He then goes back to the farm all excited, and he's unaware of the watching sand people. Luke arrives home and gets into an argument with Uncle Owen. It's basically just like what we saw in the movie. Luke wants to hang out with his friends, and Uncle Owen's mad that his chores aren't finished. But this is a different occasion. Biggs is leaving for the academy, and this is a goodbye party that Luke wants to go to. Luckily, Beru, or someone pretending to be her, sides with Luke. And I say someone pretending to be her because she looks nothing like Beru did in the comics. It's just some Donna Reed hybrid or so. It just looks nothing like Beru. "Owen, Biggs is Luke's best friend. He'll be gone for over a year or more. You let a brother leave without saying goodbye, haven't you wished?" "Enough, Beru. You can go, young man, but don't ask for anything else until you have a functioning treadmill. And if those brackerators break down..." "Oh, they won't, sir. I promise." This is one of my annoyances about the Expanded Universe. Why is it that every single Expanded Universe story with Uncle Owen has him being a mean old gruff man to Luke? And you know what? I actually know the answer to that question. It's because that's what we saw him do in the movie for those 10 minutes that he was on screen or whatever. Just because he was like that for those 10 minutes that we saw of his life doesn't mean that he was like that every single second of Luke's childhood. It's like they're afraid to try something different with Owen in the Expanded Universe because, you know, they don't want to be labeled out of character. But I'd like to think that he and Luke had some positive father-son moments since he was the guy who raised Luke. For all we know, that, you know, that day in the movie could have just been been a bad day for him, and that's why he was grumpy. Of course, the day only got worse when those stormtroopers torched him and his wife and their farm. Beru does have a point about Anakin leaving without saying goodbye. Unless another meaning is retconned, Anakin and Owen's only encounter in Episode 2 basically had Anakin take off with Padme in their ship to save Obi-Wan on Geonosis without telling Owen and Beru goodbye. Kind of rude. And Luke has some questions about Owen's relationship with his father to the Beru imposter. Gee, I never figured Uncle Owen would give in. What happened between him and my father? Nothing really, Luke. Perhaps Owen just depended too much on your father staying with him on the farm. Like he does now with me, whenever I mention going to the academy like Big C. He cares for you, Luke, in his own gruff way. I guess. I know that. All his effort on the farm is to build something for us all. It makes me feel like a traitor to even think about leaving Aunt Beru. I know that Beru says that Owen cares, but I'd really love to see a story that shows us that he does. And Beru is right. Nothing happened between Owen and Anakin. Although this interpretation of Anakin being wanted by Owen to stay on the farm is... Perhaps this is to cover up the Jedi story and lend credence to the Navigator on the Spice Freighter story. Well, that night, Luke is in the garage tuning up his Skyhopper. Luke didn't tell Owen that the celebration for Biggs is happening at Beggar's Canyon, otherwise he never would have let him go, and that's why he's getting his Skyhopper ready. While sitting at the controls, he daydreams about being a Big Shot pilot, and we get Luke. He's flying in some sort of a ship. It doesn't really look like an X-Wing. It's some sort of ship that I don't think I've ever seen in Star Wars. It's X-Wing-like, especially the way the cockpit is shaped. His mind's dreaming eye, he is Commander Skywalker, leading a flight of starfighters into combat. They're battling some cruiser. Now the enemy destroyer looms before him, a raider, a slaver, trying to escape with its living cargo, trying and failing. Then the next panel, they're aboard the, one of the hallways inside of the freighter, then they're having a shootout with the enemy. Skywalker again! He's the one who stopped us in the Styx system! And yes, it's spelled Styx just like the band. That's his last success. He may have boarded us swiftly, but he's going to die just as fast. But in this blaster duel, deadly skill, not talk, determines the winner. And when quarters are too close for shooting, a fist can be deadly too, as the slave ship captain soon learns. And we see Luke punching out the slave ship's captain with a waiting female behind him, who in the next panel he's making out with. And it says, then it is over, except for a lovely hostage's gratitude, and even the promise of greater adventures to come. Thank goodness that that hostage is not his sister. It's a fun sequence, I love that. None of these seem like Star Wars ships or enemies, but it's fair to say at this point that Luke knows very little to nothing of the Empire and the Rebellion. I love how, in that fantasy sequence, he's given the rank of Commander Skywalker. Marvel did not know this at the time, but that was going to be Luke's rank in the Empire Strikes Back movie. Luke's daydream is interrupted by Uncle Owen with his typical yelling about Luke about finishing his chores. The next day, Luke and the other Tatooine teens, as I call them, fly their skyhoppers in Beggar's Canyon, which I believe is the first appearance of Beggar's Canyon. It's been mentioned before, but this is the first time we actually see it in the expanded universe. Beggar's Canyon, any adult on Tatooine will tell you to avoid this twisting, mile-deep testament to the power of erosion. Any teenager will tell you it's the only place on a dull backwater world to find a few frills. We see in that panel a bunch of multicolored, and I think it's just the shading, I don't think that they're actually multicolored, skyhoppers flying through Beggar's Canyon. Like, I count on this panel 2, 4, 5, 6 of them total. So, just a bunch of teenagers goofing around. So, the kids do what's basically a Star Wars version of drag racing. Luke and Biggs keep stealing the lead from each other while less experienced pilots are forced to pull out or die, as the panel says. Eventually, while they're flying through Beggar's Canyon, Luke and Biggs are the only two left. Kind of reminiscent of the Death Star trench run. Except we don't have Wedge in there saying, I'm hit! I can't stay with you! They also refer to each other as shooting stars, which is very poignant, given that that's how Luke remembers him and Biggs in Issue 6 when Biggs dies. Biggs winds up doing some tricks and wins, driving Luke Skywalker to pull out or crash. The gang celebrates after they land. We see some people from the deleted Anchorhead scenes in the movie, like Cammy, Wendy, and Deke. not everyone is celebrating, though. We see some Jawas, like, just kind of in the background. Not too far in the background. Like, they're close enough to the teens to interact with them, but they're just kind of doing their own thing. The banter is long and mostly good-natured, leaving any hard feelings to some local Jawas, annoyed that there are no wrecks to salvage. Wah, wah, wah. That's kind of funny. The party is stopped, though, when a land speeder crashes in the distance. The gang rushes over, and the wounded survivor warns them of incoming sand people. Apparently, some idiots accidentally polluted some sand people relic, so now the sand people are not happy, and they're ready to attack anywhere from Anchorhead to the farms. Just then, the sand people open fire on the teenagers, who duck under a trench and fire back. Luke and Biggs make their way to a skyhopper to warn the farmers. Along the way, Biggs is wounded by one of the Tusken Raiders, who has poisoned him with a sphere. Luke now has to fly the wounded Biggs to get medical help. So they're taking off from a skyhopper, and Biggs is kind of being a backseat driver. No, Luke, stay low. They're better armed than you, remember. Try for altitude, and we're a sitting duck for the long-range blasters. You're going to have to stay down. Go through the mountains. Stead, over there. Through? Biggs, there's no way, except, yeah. Diablo cut. No one's ever done it before, probably for a good reason that it's impossible. But if we take time to go the long way around, some farmers and part of Anchorhead might not be waiting. And you haven't mentioned yourself, Biggs. Biggs does have a point, but he's being a big backseat driver here. Come on, Luke is trying to help you. The boys do make it to the other side, though, thanks to Luke's piloting. Could the Force have helped? The narrative does not say for sure, but I wouldn't doubt it. The Sand People are waiting at the other end of Diablo Cut, and they get some damage on the Skyhopper, forcing it to crash right outside the farm. And boy, you can bet that Owen is angry, but Luke explains the situation and makes sure that Biggs gets the medical help, and that the authorities are called about the Sand People. Luke then realizes that it's his destiny to be a pilot, because we had those doubts from him earlier in the issue with Aunt Beru about how he felt disloyal for thinking of leaving the farm, and how could he do that to Uncle Owen. But now he realizes, after this adventure, that there's no escaping his destiny. He's a pilot. We then get another splash page about what's in store for Luke. Yes, another one of those splash pages that I love, but yet I complain about every single podcast. The, hey, remember the movie splash page? It's drawn very well. We see, it actually depicts lots of scenes. And of course, he will reluctantly at first, as events beyond his home planet conspire, to send him into the greatest adventure of all, an adventure which reaches a chilling height with the Battle of the Death Star. We see, R2 showing Luke Leia's message, except she has Kirby crackles, the burning homestead, Chewbacca and Han piloting the Falcon, shoot out aboard the Death Star with stormtroopers, with Darth Vader looming in the background, and the Death Star trench run, and the exploding Death Star, which actually looks more like the remote that Luke was practicing with on the Falcon. Luke has a goofy face when he's getting the lightsaber from Obi-Wan in that panel for the splash page. Kind of funny. I'm loving this one. You know, complaints aside, I'm loving the obligatory movie splash page. Well, Luke is able to snap out of the flashback and is back in the Falcon's cockpit in present day. Han comes to relieve him and apologizes for taking so long. Remembering the days when he longed to be a pilot, he tells Han that he's exactly where he wants to be. Which wraps up the issue. There is a lot of depth here. You really get into Luke's character and the teenage angst and recklessness. Not sure if I can credit our guest Chris Claremont with it, or if that was Archie's doing, because when you have two writers, you never know. As I said before, the space fantasy was a definite highlight and memorable moment. Herb Trimp and Al Milgram really brought it this issue with the art. Luke looked like an actual teenager, there was some innocence in him, and he's not the action hero that Carmine Infantino's been drawing him to be. For this story, that was really important. Now, if only they knew how to draw Aunt Beru. I do think that things were wrapped up way too quickly, though. The Sand People attacking the farms was a very important story point that Luke kept on bringing up. Yet we don't see the conclusion. The letters pages this month were interesting. One reader asked when Darth Vader was coming back, and Marvel replied that they were waiting for the okay from Lucasfilm, because they didn't want to invalidate anything from the upcoming Star Wars sequel, which wound up being The Empire Strikes Back. Another reader, this is funny, asked why there was only white people in Star Wars, and then Marvel replied, well, we're really only seeing a small part of the galaxy right now, and it's not like we're dealing with a futuristic Earth. This is a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And then someone complained about the color of Han's eyes being wrong. That was a fun fill-in issue. But now back to the story we were promised. The Empire will be returning in the series for the first time since the movie adaptation. That's right. For the first time since issue 6, we're going to get the Empire. So next issue, the blurb says, "The Hand of the Empire." Or, as the story is more commonly known, "The Empire Strikes." It's a 6-part story. We're going to get the return of the Empire, introduction to some new characters who are going to play a big part in this series, like the House of Tag, and yes, the return of Darth Vader. I'm going to try and knock all of that out this week, just for fun, you know. But no promises. I'll see you all then.